Timing is everything, as they say, particularly in comedy. But in this case, companies were finding that they could take companies public very rapidly. Most of them were consumer driven, needed to make a name for themselves. And as a result, they were throwing money at companies like ours. And I would tell you, from 1998 till March of 2000, we had big baskets and we're just catching the money and it was overflowing.
A little bet, a little rise, eat right and advertise. A little bet, a little rise. And one more thing, get your name out there.
Hello and welcome to Paleo Ad Tech. I'm Marty Kine.
And I'm Jill Royce. And we are the hosts of this podcast that looks at the first two decades of advertising and marketing technology.
From double click to double verify. And everything in between.
Get your name out there.
So we are very happy to welcome Dave Moore to the show. Dave is the co-founder and CEO of Brightpool, which is a cookie-free identity resolution and verification provider. He worked at Turner Broadcasting and Petri Media before founding the legendary 24/7 Media. The company went public in 1998 and acquired Real Media in 2000. It was renamed 24/7 Real Media and ultimately was sold to WPP in 2007. It lives on as part of Zaxis, where Dave was chairman and president of WPP Digital until 2019. Back in 2009, however, Dave was very busy, where he was elected chairman of the IAB. He started Brightpool in 2019. We like to start with a random personal question. We heard that you swam the entire island of Manhattan. Is this true and was it enjoyable?
Well, it is true. However, there is a qualifier, and that was we had a relay team. So there are five of us that did it, I think three different times. And it always seemed like I had to go in the worst possible places. The first time was Hell's Gate, where the currents are very strong, and I swam in place for 15 to 20 minutes, making no progress. I did get a tetanus shot before I did this one.
Good call. Amazing. All right. Well, we'll fast forward from swimming to marketing and advertising. What was your first job in the marketing or advertising world?
The first job that I had was in the television advertising business. It was with a company called PGW, which was a television representative company like Petri or Katz Media, Cox, that are available today. We sold television advertising on behalf of television stations in markets outside of their origin.
Where were you based in those days?
Well, I started in Chicago and got into the training program at PGW. The way the training program worked is that they trained you for 3 or 4 months. And if nobody hired you in 6, you got fired. It meant that nobody wanted you. And there were, 21 offices in major cities throughout the United States. I was sent to New York for 2 weeks of intensive training. And when I got to New York, there were 3 job openings in the office. So I went into one of the sales manager. I'm your guy. I can do it. You can count on me. He goes, you got it. Go home, pack your bags, be back here in a week. I'm like, oh, I'm moving to New York. So I went home, packed my bags, came back and started selling in New York City. It was a great place to start. And that's where I moved from PGW to Turner Broadcasting. And Turner Broadcasting was a great place. In those days, you made sales calls with Ted Turner. He led the charge.
What was Ted like as a boss?
He was, he'd get
character
into a sales. Oh, yeah. He'd get into a sales meeting, go, man, we're going to take this hill. Networks are destroying the youth of America. They'll be out of business by 1990. It's up to all of you to be an evangelist for this industry and, of course, get money for Turner Broadcasting. And he would make sales calls with you. And it was interesting. In some cases, he'd really help. And in other cases, he might really hurt.
So in the mid-90s, this thing called the internet appears, Netscape and so on, and you founded 24/7 Media. And this was the very beginning of the commercial internet. So what led you to found it? How did you recognize an opportunity?
After Turner Broadcasting, I worked at Lifetime Television. And the CEO of Lifetime with whom I had worked for 10, 11 years. He had bought Petrie Television, which was a company just like PGW, the one that I had started my career with. And he wanted to expand the company. And what I thought I would do is represent websites the same way that TV stations are represented by this company. And after representing websites for about a year, it was pretty clear that that was not a business. It was different than the television business because television stations were local in nature. We were just selling their inventory outside of the markets in which they resided. Whereas when you represented a website, the world is your audience. It's a national audience and international audience. And as a result, we once we started generating over $1 million in commissions from a website, a smart CFO said, well, you know, for $1 million, I can hire my own sales force. So you essentially, your success would drive you out of business. So that's when we decided that we would start a website network. And so we had been bootstrapping it, and in 1997, DoubleClick raised $40 million of venture funding. So I went into the owner of Petrie and I said, hey, look, you know, this is a big opportunity. We need to step up. We need more money to more resources overall, because frankly, in those days, believe it or not, we were unplugging fax machines and plugging our computers into the telephone lines. It was the only way we could see what was going on. Otherwise, we had no internet access. So I said, look, I'd love to help you out. Which way'd you come in? No, seriously, what he said was, I don't have money to resources. Why don't you go out and look for partners? And so I decided the best thing to do was get control of what was called Petrie Interactive. So I offered to do a management buyout of that. I was able to do that in October of 1997. And I had essentially 3 months to go out and raise money. And I was fortunate, able to raise $10 million in venture capital. And I merged Petrie Interactive with Katz Interactive, another company that could not get resources within their parent, and also then a third company called Interactive Imaginations. And that's where the venture capital came from, because the investor there had run into problems with Interactive Imaginations. He was looking for more adult supervision, if you will, and he was willing to double down. And so between, it was Citigroup Venture Funding and Prospect Street Ventures, and then Big Flower Holdings. The three of them contributed $3.3 million, and we launched 24/7 Media at the beginning of 1998.
What were the services you're providing then? So you're basically an ad network, a network of websites, and you were selling banner ads on these sites?
Yeah. And so essentially our proposition is that by networking together all these sites, we had over 1,200 of them, we could offer you a proposition similar to the walled gardens, which in those days were Yahoo, InfoSeek,
AOL,
and others. And of course, we went public in August of 1998.
So you went public the same year you launched?
Yeah, we had $2.5 million of revenue. Believe it or not, went public in August of 98. And that's when the market started to catch fire. Timing is everything, as they say, particularly in comedy. But in this case, companies were finding that they could take companies public very rapidly. And that business of going public took off for a lot of the dot-coms. They got all this money to spend. Most of them were consumer-driven, needed to make a name for themselves. And as a result, they were throwing money at companies like ours. And I would tell you, from 1998 till, call it, March of 2000, we had big baskets and we're just catching the money, and it was overflowing, and a lot of it was hitting the floor and being scooped up by others. But it was an incredible time overall. And what I fault myself for not realizing is that all this money that was coming from dot-com companies. So 90% of our money was coming from dot-coms. It was not coming from Procter & Gamble. And we had a very acquisitive board. They wanted us to get big quick. We did, I would say, 15 acquisitions by the beginning of year 2000. We had, at that time, 1,200 employees. We had started with about 30. We had 52 offices in 29 countries worldwide. We had about $100 million in the bank. We were cash break even in first quarter of 2000. We had a market capitalization of $1.8 billion, and our stock price had reached a high in January of 2000 of $69. Life was good.
Did it feel at all, Dave, like a bubble, or did this just feel like the way the market was going?
Well, Alan Greenspan talked about irrational
exuberance.
But how do we know when irrational exuberance has unduly escalated asset values, which then become subject to unexpected and prolonged contractions?
And it did seem like it was pretty frothy overall. But I remember I was at a family reunion in January, and they're all saying, should I buy the stock? I said, well, look, you know, obviously I'm a big fan, but you have to make your own decisions. They said, well, are you gonna stay there? Yes, how's business? Business is terrific. We were on a $400 million run rate in January of 2000. And then of course, in March of 2000, NASDAQ peaked. And every day the stock started going down. And companies that thought that they were gonna go public now didn't go public. And so we cut 40% of our workforce in fourth quarter of 2000, which was a lot of people, 400 people out of 1,200. It wasn't nearly enough. We reported what I thought was the largest loss that put me in company of a lot of people that I guess I wouldn't choose to keep company with, but we lost $780 million in fourth quarter of 2000. We wrote off all the goodwill, all the acquisitions that we had done. The board was scared to death. We're going to get sued. And then, of course, Enron goes bankrupt at the beginning of 2001, made my losses look small at that point. But from that point onward, it was really tough sledding. We had 17 analysts covering us by mid-2001. They had all dropped coverage. We finished the year 2001 after the horrible 9/11 incident with a 15-cent stock price, a $15 million market cap, a going concern opinion from our auditors. Life had turned sour pretty quick.
So if we could go back to the boom years, so you're acquiring companies like crazy, what is the office culture like at that time? What is your headquarters like? What is the mood?
Yeah, we never did some of the crazy parties and that sort of thing that you heard about in those days, although we did have some parties for advertisers and clients. But we're hiring people so fast, and I would have a monthly breakfast with random select group of employees, just talk about business and so on and so forth. And I remember in one of them, we go around the room, we talk about what they're doing. And he goes, this one guy says, well, I just got hired a few days ago. I said, well, what's your role? And he goes, well, it has not been determined yet. Like, we hired somebody and we don't know what they're gonna do. This is getting a little out of hand. The atmosphere in the office, because I'm a positive guy overall and the industry was thriving, was really very positive overall. Kids that wanted to get into the business had these outrageous expectations. They come in and like, well, you know, what's my option package? Do I get $1 million of options or what? So it was a little out of control in that regard. But then as, you know, the business started to decline, a lot of folks left voluntarily or involuntarily, went back to traditional media roles. It was like the The internet was over for some of them. Some of the ones that had, were in senior management had, you know, option packages that were worth millions of dollars at one point. Now they were worth nothing. And, you know, until you put, you sell an option or your stock and you put the money in the bank, it's just paper. And so that created a lot of folks' dissatisfaction with the industry overall because they were rich and then they weren't. And then, of course, you know, selling was really tough. Selling advertising for those years was tough after the boom. And, you know, they say, you talk about what's your sales forecast? Well, have you read the press? You know, the press is just saying that, that advertising is not growing anymore. And it was a very interesting contrast. You know, it went from being such an explosive media to, you know, now it's been really tough. But, you know, after 2001, we started to grow the business again. It was tough. There was probably 8 significant events that occurred that allowed us to survive. And as we got past 2002 and 2003, we were able to raise some more money and build the company up again. And when we did sell the company to WPP in 2007, you know, we had $200 million in revenues. We had a $20 million EBITDA. So it'd become a real business, but boy, it was not easy.
Yeah, we had Dave Morgan on a few weeks ago, and he said that that turnaround you oversaw from 2001 to selling to WPP is one of the most undersung turnarounds of the whole dot-com era.
And you know, it's interesting, Dave, I give him credit, Dave Moore, and what he did is just the biggest, probably most untold story that he could take a $10 million company and build it back to 650.
You know, Dave Morgan is a good friend and colleague. And, you know, he and I did a workshop at one of these big conferences that WPP put on. And it was called The Worst of Times and the Best of Times of 24/7 in Real Media. And all we did was talk about different things that happened. It was a sellout crowd. You know, people were just really interested in it. You know, Real Media, it missed the window to go public, and we got the opportunity to buy them actually in 2001.
The way Dave tells it, so they had an offer from DoubleClick, and then DoubleClick tried to take $1 million off it, and the investors, the Swiss investors, they got offended. So then they kept the company alive, and you saw some ads somewhere, and you said, wait a second, this company's not for sale.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, DoubleClick actually helped 24/7 survive, and they had said they're buying Real Media. So, I mean, here we were trading at 15 cents and, you know, trying to survive ourselves. The idea of actually trying to buy somebody at that time didn't seem to be an option. And then I did see an ad in one of the top trade publications at the time. It was John Patel's publication. It used to be that thick, but it started getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And I think,
oh, Industry Standard.
Right. And they ultimately went out of business too. But there was an ad from Real Media that said to anybody that's a DoubleClick client, you can come over and we'll give you 50% off of whatever their rate is. And that's when I said, this sale is not going through. And what you described earlier is exactly what happened. They tried to retrade the deal. The Swiss got pissed off. So I called a friend of mine over there that ultimately became the CEO of 24/7 Media after we were bought by WPP, a fellow by the name of Jonathan Sue. And I said to John, hey, doesn't look like you guys are selling anymore. He goes, we are not. He goes, would you like to talk? I said, yes, we would. He was over in 1 hour. And so the Swiss were getting ready to shut it down. So I was able to work out a deal. I was ready to do a 50-50 merger. They didn't want to do that because it would require shareholder approval, anything over 19.9%. So they said, we'll take 19.9%. I worked out a deal for them to loan us some money. And we renamed the company 24/7 Real Media.
So you got them for $2 million?
Well, I used stock. It was my 15 cent stock.
So, yes, you got them for free.
A little bit more than that. We were $15 million market cap. So gave them 20% of $15 million, $3 million.
overall, when you think about sort of managing this crazy turnaround for the business, like what was your mindset? How did you, you know, go after this turnaround?
Oh, it was, I remember we hired a company that actually worked, did the work out for Enron called Zofo Cooper. And over the weekend, we worked through how we were going to turn the company around, because sell this, run from that, do this, da 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 da. And I remember I'm giving a presentation after the weekend of work to the board on a Sunday night, and I'm thinking, how did I get into this situation? This is unbelievable how fast this turned for the worse. But you know, my parents always taught me to, or you know, finish what you start. My favorite quote is from Winston Churchill, never give up, very short one. And so starting in 2000, I got into doing triathlons so that I got, had an outlet for, I guess, frustration and anxiety and everything else. And I'm still doing them to this day. You just persevere. You just keep going and talk to employees, you know, it's not the size of a dog in the fight, it's the size of fighting the dog, and going gets tough, the tough get going, all those things. And, you know, developed a core group of people that were excited about getting through this. I mean, I did one time, was looking for my general counsel, his door was closed, knocked on it, opened it up, and there was about 8 executives in there who were advocating that we should file for bankruptcy. And the reason they wanted to file for bankruptcy was so they could get a severance package. And I said, hey, look, man, we're not filing for bankruptcy. We're going to fight right to the last day. And anybody who wants to leave now can leave now with 2 weeks, and that's it. And a couple of them did. But it was, you know, it was tough sledding, no question about it. We sold one of our companies, it's called Award Track. We'd spent $75 million in stock to buy them. We were selling them for $45,000. And when we got to the point where we had signed all the documents, we said, here's the wiring instructions. The guy pulls out his American Express card and said, I'd like to charge it on here. So are you kidding me? No, I'm not kidding you. I want the points. So what did we do? We went and opened an American Express account that day, ran his card through it.
Phenomenal. You got to do what you got to do. Well, when you acquired Real Media, so they were a tech company. I mean, they were an ad network, but they also had an ad server, Open Ad Stream. And then you went on a little mini technology acquisition spree, I think, in the early aughts. So you bought an analytics company, an SEM company. So you were basically a rep shop. You were selling ads, but then you sort of turned toward acquiring technology. What was the strategic thought there?
Well, we actually started developing our own technology, and ad serving was the most important component of it at the beginning. And so we'd spent a lot of money on our own ad server. And when we merged with Real Media, of course they had one, and the advantage that they had over us was they also had subscribers, and we were only using it for our own purposes. So there was another revenue stream there. So we killed our ad server solution. We moved everything onto theirs, which was the right move, because now we had not only an advertising revenue stream of commissions, but we also had, you know, fees from monthly fees from people that were licensing our ad serving solution. And of course, we're still not out of the woods yet. We're competing against DoubleClick, who had $1 billion in the bank at that point. When it came to really closing a deal, it was not easy. A lot of times I'd have to get on the phone with their CFO to talk to them about our prospects of surviving and putting software code into escrow in case we went out of business so that they could continue on. You might imagine DoubleClick was cleaning up in the ad serving business during that period of time.
That sell to WPP, $650 million acquisition in 2007. Sounds like they paid, what, $11 a share for a company that had been valued at, you know, $4 or $5 a few years before that?
Well, yeah, I mean, our stock had come up. We'd done a reverse stock split. I think in terms of the premium that they paid to the stock, it was probably in the 15, 20% range overall. We had decided that we were going to enter into a process to sell the company at the beginning of 2007. We had an economist that was predicting this recession and telling us that, you know, it's coming, could be in 2008, maybe mid-2008, you have an opportunity to batten down the hatches, get through it, or enter into a process and sell the company and watch it from the sideline. So I got our chief operating officer, at that time was John Sue, and my general counsel, Mark Moran. The three of us met, and I said, well, what do you think, guys? They go, let's sell it. We don't want to go through what we went through the last time. And so I agreed. We hired Lehman Brothers, who began to shop the company. And during that period of time, Hellman and Freeman bought DoubleClick for $1 billion, which actually, when you think of it, they had about $400 million in the bank already. So I was on the phone with the board, I remember, and say, wow, it just got sold to Google for $1 billion thereabouts. My numbers may be a little cockeyed here. It's been a while. But in any event, I'd been working on a joint venture with WPP to provide a technology platform for them that was customized for their advertisers, because all Real Media's technology was doing for us at that time was ad serving to publishers. And so I sent a note to Martin Sorrell on a Friday night, which is when that deal happened with Google. And I said, you know, now more than ever, my proposition makes sense. And I get up on Saturday morning, and typical Martin is, agree, one word. So I'm like, well, you know, where do we go from here, you know? And so on Sunday, a little later on the day, I get an email from him, and he says, David, I was wondering if you have time for a conversation tomorrow, Sunday. I said, well, yeah, I've got to wash my hair and
go to church. Run,
but, you know, I think I'd squeeze in. And so I had a meeting, telephone conversation with him. I remember I was out on the North Fork of Long Island where I am now. I was in the car overlooking the Long Island Sound. And he says, David, I'm thinking that we ought to do something a little more comprehensive. And I said, well, what would that be? He says, I think we ought to acquire you. I said, well, that sounds like an excellent idea to me. We have a process underway right now with Lehman Brothers, and we'd love to have you enter it. And he says, we're using Goldman, be in touch on Monday. And they entered the process, and they had the highest bid for our company. We were officially acquired in July 9th of 2007 for $649 million. I always rounded up to $650 myself. So close, you know, but it was $649.
Very close. So you're part of WPP and you stayed there for a bit.
I was there 11 years.
What was your role there? Well, how did that work out?
The way it worked was when the day that the deal closed, I was in London. And we just had a press or a conference with the analyst, Martin, his chief financial officer, Paul Richardson, myself and John Sue. And went very well, very exciting. I get a call that there's an emergency at home. My wife has been rushed to the hospital with what turned out to be a brain tumor. So I had to fly home right away. And unfortunately, it was a 3-year battle for her. But when I started the process of taking care of her, I realized that I couldn't be the CEO for any longer. I just didn't have the time to do it or the focus. And so that's when I went to Martin and Mark Reed, who's now the CEO of WPP. And I said, you know, I don't think I can do the CEO job anymore, but Jonathan Sue is a very capable man and he could take this over. And, you know, in my mind, I was ready for them to just kind of, you know, exit me from the group. And to the contrary, they said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I think I could still be helpful. I could be chairman. And they go, hey, great, perfect. That's exactly what we want. They didn't negotiate my salary any. And I was, like I say, I was prepared for them to, you know, send me away. And I became, the deal that I had with John that he had to be CEO for 2 years. And in 2 years, he resigned, went to run another company. And so I became the CEO again, 24/7. And during that period of time, we launched another little division called the Media Innovation Group, which was for advertisers overall. And that was going very well. And we essentially ended up taking the Media Innovation Group and 24/7 and partnered it with Group M, changed the name and called it Zaxis. And I became the chairman of Zaxis. And at the same time, they also had me become president of WPP Digital. And WPP Digital had about 17 companies of which they owned all or part of. So I worked doing both those things until I left WPP at the, call it in middle of 2019. Martin was a very interesting, forceful personality. When you were in a meeting with him, man, you had to be on your toes. And he never failed to ask a question that I didn't have the answer to. I mean, it was just, I had just about everything else, but there'd always be something that he got. And then, you know, I worked with Mark Greet during that period of time, a wonderful guy, and is now the CEO of WPP. And so I found it very intellectually stimulating. But, you know, near, you know, beginning of 2019, I felt that I had more to do, and it wasn't there. And that's when I started Brightpool.
Tell us what it does and what's the opportunity you've identified there.
When we started the company, essentially in middle of 2019, we were quite certain that cookies were going to be deprecated across the board. Firefox had already started to talk about them, so it's Safari, and we felt that Google wouldn't be far behind. So our strategy was to create a technology that could replace them, the Brightpool ID. And 2019, it was interesting. It was more research and development because publishers are very attuned to revenue today, revenue tomorrow. It's something that's going to happen in a year or two, you know, we'll worry about that later. So it was fairly slow going. Beginning of 2020, we currently have about 200 million identities under management. We have Code on Page with a large group of publishers overall. And so one of the things we discovered with identity, particularly this year, is nobody really has scale other than the walled gardens. And so we are now, while we have our own ID, we're working on interoperable IDs so that we can provide scale collectively to the open web. And that's going very well.
And we would like to thank Julia Douglas for letting us use her music, juliadouglas with two S's.com.